Live. What's going on, folks? Welcome back to another edition of the Nuclear Golf Podcast. This is episode number 8. Can't believe we've been doing this for 8 episodes now. It's pretty crazy. It wasn't long ago that we didn't even have a podcast. And now we're just rolling every single week, every Monday, bringing you guys the latest golf news, reaction, all sorts of stuff on here. My name's John. I'm the co-owner of Nuclear Golf and TW Legion. I'm joined tonight by Hutch Bennett, Mike Carbone, and we've also got Tim Bowman, who's acting like a clown as usual with his internet connection. So we'll see if he's able to get back in here. But yeah, we got a bunch of stuff.
Tim, like some better internet. That would be like the number one thing we need to do.
Yeah, Tim needs the old Tiger Woods bag, the AT&T.
Yeah, he needs more than that, dude. Like, hey, this is. I've never met somebody like with such bad internet. It's absolutely crazy.
For a podcast guy, you'd think he'd have his internet figured out. He's got his lighting dialed in, but his internet's not figured out. So he'll be back.
There he is. We were totally not trashing your internet while you were going.
Yeah, you were. I listened. I heard every word.
Fellas, we've got a bunch of stuff we're going to talk about tonight. Not sure if any of you guys watched the Zurich, but Ben Griffin and Andrew Novak both got their first PGA Tour wins yesterday. Got some news on the latest surrounding the Tour Championship format changes. We'll get into that. The RNA might be returning the Open Championship to Turnberry, Trump Turnberry, which has been a hot button topic over the past probably 10 years or so now. We're going to have an interview with our producer, Joey. He's behind the scenes right now. We're going to bring him in just a little bit to talk about his history and tracking on the account Scheffler Fans, which he runs. We'll also get into some TGL expansion talk, as well as some news and notes about the potential for a TGL Women's League. Talk about the Chevron yesterday and all the late drama there with the flub chip and then the eventual 5-person playoff, which was the biggest in LPGA major championship history. Neiman won on LIV. It's his 5th win on LIV. He qualified for the U.S. Open. Going to have our discussion. Should we get free relief from divots? We'll debate that one. And we have our viral video of the week. Pretty crazy situation with a cart gone wrong inside of a garage. You guys might have seen it on our account. So
yeah.
Without further ado, let's get into tonight's episode. Start it off. Not sure if any of you guys watched the Zurich, but Tim, did you have a chance to take in any of the team event this week? Or was this one of those weeks you just kind of tuned out and are going to save it for the truest?
I didn't watch any of it, to be honest with you. I followed it on Twitter, but I was doing other things this week, so somebody will have to pick me up on this one.
Tim is a blue blood for golf. Like, he's if it's a team event, he wants nothing to do with it.
It's the Ryder Cup, or unless it's the Ryder Cup or the President's Cup, the team stuff
it's an elitist. It's a tour loyalist. I didn't watch it either, though.
Are playing, like, there's only like a handful of guys.
Rory and Shane tried to make a little run. I was keeping up with some of that. I didn't get to watch any of it. Truth be told, on Sunday I watched LIV instead, because they had a stacked leaderboard, and it was a great tournament down the stretch.
Great exhibition,
yeah. Cool pitching
tournament, golfing tournament.
Guys, preseason,
400 guys. Preseason, it was cool. 60-yard par fours.
Okay. It was cool, but I did keep up with some of the Rory stuff, and then Novak won. He's part of the winning team, right? So he,
was it 2 weeks in a row? Listen to this, so.
That he was close.
This is from Scott Hamilton on X. He said, heck of a heater for Andrew Novak, paired with Ben Griffin for first career PGA Tour victory, now locked into the PGA Championship and remaining 3 signature events. Up to number 6 in the FedEx Cup standings, and he's collected $4.05 million over the last month. So, you know, even though you guys were sleeping on the Zurich, Andrew Novak was not.
He was not, no.
Go ahead, Mike.
It's a great backdoor way into getting into all these big events. It's pretty cool, and I'm curious to what you guys think about this. You know, the Zurich doesn't get too much hype. just because, you know, the time of the year, I mean, the field's usually not too great, but what if we were to get some special invites for guys like Steph Curry or Tony Romo, some like bigger, some big golf guys that were great at another sport? I feel like that would get a lot more eyeballs.
Yeah.
Then no, the elitists like Tim would lose their mind.
Brock Purdy's playing. He doesn't want anything to do with it.
Mike, I
agree too much of an exhibition.
Yeah, I agree with you though, Mike. Honestly, like I think this is kind of the type of tournament where they could do something like that. Even like the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, right? Like they've kind of shifted that away to be the focus is much more on the actual competition. Like there used to be that whole emphasis on the celebrity portion. You don't even really hear a lot about that anymore. It's more so the behind the scenes content. Like they don't have the time and the TV window to broadcast much of those shots from those guys, right? You're mainly seeing, you know, the action like from the guys that are actually competing in the tournament. But at an event like Zurich, like if you could get some celebrities involved, I think that'd be a good opportunity, to be honest.
Tim, what do you think about that? Did you catch any of that?
Zurich?
Yeah, in terms
putting
of
celebrities, special invites.
Yeah, yeah. Special invites for guys like Steph Curry or Tony Romo, some bigger names in other sports, just to get some more eyeballs.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's going to do that. I mean, you might as well have Grant play in it and guys like that. Like, I don't.
Yeah, throw them into it as well. Why not?
But why? It's a PGA Tour event.
I understand that, but if it's already a backdoor event for some of these other guys, like for instance, like Brooks Koepka, he played with his brother in that tournament, trying to get him his tour card back when he was on tour. So why can't some other guys with like a higher profile play in that event that are still solid golfers? Obviously they're not tour level, but you know, maybe they go on a heater and they could, you know, compete at least.
Look, to get me to watch something like that, I'd rather have guys like me, you, and Hutch playing it. Like, I'd rather watch that. I don't want to watch if I'm not going to watch the best. Like, here's the thing. If I'm not going to watch the best of the best, then for that particular tournament, I'm not going to have that much interest in watching second-tier guys. I'd rather watch us play, like, put us with a pro and see what we could do because we're – garbage compared to those other guys. Like that would be more entertaining if you're going to do a tournament like that. That's just I don't have any interest in watching Steph Curry play in a team event. I can go to Tahoe and watch him play in the Tahoe tournament in July and he's playing by himself trying to win. I mean, but that's
Tim has
me.
A summer house in Tahoe.
I do, so
two of them summer Airbnb.
Like the fellas, the last thing kind of on the Zurich, is it more so just like the format that you can't really get into it, or is there just not enough top tier guys, or is it just kind of the spot on the schedule that's difficult, right? Like we're kind of in between, well, we've got the Masters, the Wells Fargo's coming up. I guess it's called the Truist now, but the Wells Fargo is typically a pretty big event, right? Good field. And then you kind of, it's a little bit of a lull here right now before we get to the PGA and the Truist. Is it just kind of a spot in the schedule, or is it more so the format that you guys can't really get into? I mean, it's not a top tier event, right? There's no denying.
It's the field for me. I don't care where it is on the schedule, and I don't care. The format doesn't matter to me. Obviously, as the resident live guy, I'm okay with the format. I just think that there's nobody big who plays it. You got Rory, and it was like the biggest thing in the world. Like, oh, God, Rory agreed to play. We even talked about after the Masters that he was scheduled, but that he probably wouldn't play. So for me, it's just the lack of star power. There's not any.
Yeah, I think it's two things. I think, one, Hutch, I agree with you. I think the field is an issue. There's not enough firepower in the field. And secondly, I think it's the course, too. I think that it's not a desirable location. I don't think a lot of guys are really keen on going down to Louisiana. I mean, unless you're from that way, you know, that's not really a place you think about going too often. So with that in mind, I think if they were to change the scenery a little bit, make it somewhere a little more enticing, somewhere, you know, players could take their families, make a, not necessarily a vacation, but make it a fun weekend in a sense. I think it would make the tournament a lot more fun to watch.
For sure. All right. Well, that's kind of all we got for the Zurich. We obviously weren't too dialed into it, obviously, but you know, it's still a good event if you want to enjoy the action over the weekend. Good for the two guys that won it, right? Like, it's their first PGA Tour wins. There's nothing to take away from them with regards to that. They still earned their victory and they're PGA Tour champions now. Let's shift gears here and move to the Tour Championship format change. So, you know, this has been talked about for a long time. Like, ever since they decided to start going with the starting strokes format, people have had issues with that. So this proposal, which is detailed in Golf Week's article, we've got the no more starting strokes. There's no match play as well, which is something that had been, you know, on the table as an option for bringing back match play into the Tour Championship format. So essentially what it's apparently going to be is there's going to be a cut line after the top 16. And then there's going to be, I need the graphic again, Joey, if you can put it back up, because I don't know these off the top. And then the eight players advance to Saturday, and then the top four players advance to Sunday. And then the guys that finished in the remainder of the top eight, like 5 through 8, battle it out on Sunday for their positioning in the FedEx Cup standings for their final prize amounts. You know, there were some quotes on Golf Week and stuff for some of the guys that were why they were justifying no match play. They just said it's not the right time. I think Adam Scott said it's not the right time for match play, not the right format for match play. So I'm curious to hear what you guys think about this. I thought that this was going to be a great opportunity to bring match play back into the fold at the season ending event, but it seems like it's going to be more of like an elimination round type of deal where they're still playing stroke play and there's no more starting strokes. I'm curious to hear what you guys think about it.
But then I don't think there's a good answer to it, right? Like, to how to fix the Tour Championship. Cause if you do it this way, like, I think we can all agree that the way that they're doing it now doesn't really work with the starting strokes and all stuff like that. I don't like that at all. But if you do it this way, what is the reward for the way you played all year? Just because you got there? Is that just the reward that you're in the top 30, so you're there? And then further, to go even further than that, like, you're looking at, okay, after Thursday, we're cutting the field in half. And after Friday, we're doing the same thing. And after Saturday, we're doing it again. And Sunday, we're down to 4 people. You're talking about what on TV on Sunday, you got what, 5 hours, 6 hours, maybe? I mean, I know you got 5 through 8 playing on Sunday in the loser's bracket or whatever, but like, I don't know that there's a good answer. I don't think this is necessarily it, because I think you should be able to reward season long performance when you get to this point. But it's I mean, I'd be open for any kind of suggestions, because I don't know that there is a good answer for it. Maybe just stop calling it the end of the season tournament and awarding it. Maybe just make it be another tournament, and then whatever points you get out of that, where you're at in the standings at the end of that, like, that's how the season ends. It's not all riding on one tournament. I know they got away from that because it got confusing, like with Tiger winning Tour Championship and Justin Rose winning the season long race and things like that. And that's why they try to do all this stuff. But just to me, there's not a great answer.
Yeah, I think that it's good to try and mix it up a little bit. I mean, we'll see how it plays out, so I'm not going to be too critical of it right now just because we haven't seen it play out yet. So we'll see what happens. And the way I kind of, you know, or the way it came across to me is it kind of gives the feeling of like the NFL playoffs. Like, Thursday's the wild card round, Friday's the divisional round, Saturday's the conference championship, and then Sunday's the Super Bowl, essentially. And it sucks go ahead.
Do you give the top people like a first round bye? Like, they're automatically into Friday?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's something you could potentially look into, but you know, it's kind of different with golf. Obviously, it'd be weird to give, you know, guys a Thursday off because they played so well. But I don't know. I mean, maybe it's something they could potentially look into. I mean, there's not really a clear-cut answer because that's why they continually tinker with this event. There hasn't been an answer since they came out with the FedEx Cup, and we still don't have one. It was started in 2007 when Tiger won, so that's 18 years ago, and we still don't have an answer. So I don't know. Keep trying until you find something. So maybe this will be the answer. I don't know. I'm not too firm one way or the other, but I'm interested to see something different at least. And getting away from the whole strokes starting out, I like that. I do love that.
Sweet said the vote's in the next couple of weeks, right?
Yeah.
So this isn't a final format. This is just kind of proposed.
It sounds like they've got the support behind this format and that the vote is coming in the next couple of weeks. Like it seemed like this format where they're going to have, you know, advancing to the next stage over the days seems like that's kind of been established. The only thing I can see where it potentially is interesting for the viewer is just there might be like some drama there involved with getting to that next stage, right? Like you get through to the top 16, like guys are going to be grinding in the late holes to, you know, secure their positioning to get in. And then it's going to be on to the top 8. Like there could be, that could be good TV if it, you know, if it comes down to it where guys are kind of watching their place, because it's kind of like you're trying to advance to that next cut all the time, right? I can see that being appealing. You know, I still think that there should be some form of match play element involved. You know, even if it was within the last couple of rounds or something, if you could incorporate match play into the end. You know, the reality is the guys have all played well throughout the season to get to this point. The final four guys have all kind of played at a similar level for most of the season anyway, right? Like the guys that are going to be up there have likely played well all season. So I guess it's a balance between trying to reward who the best player is, but also giving everyone kind of a chance at it.
It's fair. And like we say, I don't know that there's a great answer to it.
It's tough for sure. It's not the easiest, subject for sure. But I was definitely hoping that they would get match play back into it in some shape or form. Just people want match play bad. It was one of the best events on the PGA Tour. Like, how have they not figured out how to bring it back at this point? You would hope that they're planning for that, but that's gotta be one of the best tournaments that the tour has. Like just for general interest and, you know, just the seeding and all that, and everything that goes into it.
Yeah. There's no reason why there shouldn't be a match play, at least in the WGC or something of that nature, even if it's not in the Tour Championship, to have it be in some, you know, marquee event. That would be really good for the tour.
Well, maybe they start throwing terms around, like cutting it to 16, then 8, then 4. Like it just leads you to think match play.
What it is.
Like it's,
maybe
that's what they're gonna bring back to like Doral or something if the tour returns to a Doral, or because like they're planning to go back to a Trump course, right? They've talked about it.
Oh, we heard.
So maybe if they were to go back to a Doral, or I don't know where else they would go, but maybe they're planning to bring match play back at a venue like that. I guess we'll see.
They'd really just have to get past the Trump stuff, which it seems like globally they're kind of leaning towards getting past that and keeping the golf separate from the politics. I don't care what your politics are. Definitely
seems like that is the case for sure. You know, the RNA has recently kind of come out saying that they quote, the new chief executive of the RNA said, quote, they would love to return to Trump Turnberry in Scotland. The RNA is weighing a return to President Trump's Turnberry Resort in Scotland. Mark Darbon said they would love to return. Some concerns remain over the logistics of hosting the championship there. the RNA's view over the past 6 months to a year has been that they would be open to returning, but they were saying that there was a lot of logistical concerns to returning there. Now it seems like with these media reports that came out and with the RNA squarely saying they would love to return, it seems like they're setting the stage for a return to Turnberry. At least that's how I read the tea leaves on it. Usually these media reports, and I mean, this isn't even media reports. This is straight from the horse's mouth from the RNA. I don't think they'd be coming out and even saying this publicly because this just adds a lot of fuel to the fire of a potential return. I don't think they'd be talking about it like this if there wasn't at least a pretty clear plan to return there in the next few years.
Yeah, in the article I read, it basically came down to, I mean, they gave excuses about transportation and things like that, but it sounded to me like it just came down to ticketing because they're expecting so many people at the opens now. Apparently, Turnberry's kind of tough to fit that many people in, like as many people as they want. So I get that part of it. It was refreshing to see that it didn't have anything to do with politics or anything like that. We'll just have to, I'm with you though, John, we'll have to see where they go, but it sure seems like even talking about it seems to kind of lead you to believe that they're, we know they're seriously considering it, but they're kind of leaning towards it happening. But it sounds like to me, and Turnberry is such a great play. That's where 09 was, right? Where Stuart Sink and Tom Watson John thing Watson. Was.
Yeah.
I mean, that it's historical. Like you have to consider that. And especially for something as big as, and I want everybody on our mentions on Twitter or X to listen to me right now, the Open Championship, ladies and gentlemen, not the British Open. So you can stop coming for us. It's the Open Championship. We know what it is. But yeah, Turnberry is such a great place. I would love to see it back there selfishly because I loved watching it in 09.
Oh man, I have memories of watching the 09 Open and just, I was young at that point. Like I think I was 12, but I remember very clearly the Tom Watson thing. That was like huge storyline for golf when he was on the cusp there of becoming the oldest major champion. Oldest, right?
Oldest. Yeah. He was like 59 or something like that.
Yeah. 59. Just... I think he shot like, what did he shoot? Like 60? What did he shoot?
60. I just remember the bad experience on 18 to go to the playoff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Stuart Sink winning because Stuart Sink's local to where I live. So it's, I've actually hit a shank in front of Stuart Sink before.
Really?
yeah, he showed up to the finals of our simulator league. And when he walked over to our bay, I just happened to be hitting a wedge, like 100 yards, something like that. And I just cold shanked it up against the wall. Luckily, the simulator didn't even register the shot, so I got to retry it. And hit a good shot that time. It worked out.
Well, fellas... Yeah. Now that Tim's internet continues to be an issue, it's I don't know what's going on with him, but it's not his night.
Internet's as reliable as Tiger's body at this point.
Broken down.
John, can I
broken and slow.
Can I say one thing about the Turnberry? People remember Tom Watson for finishing second at the Open in 09. But he won the very first Open at Turnberry in 1977, 32 years prior. Which I think it's forgotten, but yeah, there's so much history at that course, and it's a really cool track, and it would definitely be cool to see that added back to the rotation.
Oh yeah, it'd be awesome. The Open Road.
I'm making sure all the terms are right for the people in the comments.
We're not getting got today.
It's the Rota.
Yeah. So we're without Tim. So, I mean, we need a fourth guy on here anyway, but it's the perfect time to bring in Joey from Scheffler Fans, and he's our producer. Joey,
what up, boys? What's going on? Not much. It's chaos over here. The roommate just got the wrong Chick-fil-A order, so it's a scene. But you know what? We're good. John, it looks like
I bet it'll still be good.
Ball up top.
Well, he's going to get the free meal. So now you got two Chick-fil-A meals for one. I mean, now it was grilled nuggets and a salad. So not sure.
That, ooh.
That's not quite the there.
Yeah.
Joey, it's about time you were on with us.
I mean, I'm on all the time. I'm just never on the screen.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. About time you're front-facing in front of the people.
Yeah,
yeah. There we go. We just got to get your boy back in the winner's circle. When's that going to happen?
I don't know, man. Hopefully this week. There's Tim.
I'm not sure. Joey's on now. Sorry, fellas. Yeah, Joey, I mean, you've been an instrumental part of this podcast. We haven't formally introduced you until right now, but you know, you're the guy behind the scenes. You're putting all the graphics together. You're managing these four clowns all the time. Yeah. You know, transitioning in and out of windows, bringing in the guests in and out. What you do is incredible, and we're super grateful for everything that you bring to this podcast. I mean, obviously, you're, you know, not always at the forefront, but we do appreciate everything that you do. And I thought tonight would be a great opportunity to bring you on, just kind of introduce yourself to the viewers, but also chat a little bit about your role on the Scheffler Fans account, because that is actually emerged as one of our top tracking accounts on Nuclear as a whole. Just tell people a little bit about Scheffler Fans. What got you into it? What motivated you to start tracking? And when did you kind of start following Scotty?
Damn, thank you. I mean, yeah, first off, I appreciate it. You know, I love to do it. It's just more of I love to be involved. It's no big deal. It's good practice getting my reps in. And again, I think, you know, we're building something big here. So I love to have it and love to be on, finally introduce myself to everybody. But yeah, I think it was May 23. So coming up on 2 years now that I joined that Scheffler account. Started real early. Obviously, you know, I got to give a lot of props to Scotty. I don't think there's a lot of trackers, man, that are grinding away and their players aren't doing too hot. Scotty does 90% of the work for me. So it's really easy to track when you got good golf and, you know, majors won and Olympics and everything. But yeah, just started doing that account and loved. I mean, obviously, Scotty Scheffler kind of took the world by storm. So it was kind of hard not to get some attention from that and want to be a part of it.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it's just, yeah, it's crazy. Like, tracking is not an easy thing to do, right? I'm not sure. Was there kind of an account that you first saw that you kind of started to see tracking? Were you familiar with Nuclear before and the trackers, or how did you, were you just a normal follower before you started getting involved?
Yeah. I mean, I got to think about it. Definitely was on the Nuclear wave. Hutch is right, John. I'm sure your account had to be probably the first one I saw, if naturally, that I came across before I even thought about it. But yeah, God, there's so many good trackers that you come across them on Twitter, and it's from a perception of the viewer. It's such a quick, you know, I used to turn on like random trackers when I'm in a tournament, and you know, like I'm on hole 9 and I'm actually really, like, I need like live updates on what, you know, someone's doing on 17 or whatever. But man, being on this side of it, it is a lot of hard work. And shout out MJ, who helps me run the account too. He does a lot of good work and probably wouldn't be possible without him, just how busy we are. But yeah, man, it's a grind and it is a sweat. And there's people out there I don't know who the longest run account is, but John, props to you, props to everyone that grinds it out, because it is no easy task, especially when you got a whole bunch of other stuff going on. It's a lot.
Now, were you on the account when the arrest happened, or were you on after?
Oh, yeah.
You were on all through that, right?
Yeah. That was a fun morning to wake up to.
That was crazy morning.
And I'd actually woken up before it. And, like, you know, especially when we're in the prime major season, summer golf, I feel like, you know, Twitter's the first thing I'm opening when I wake up. Just got to get active on the bird. But I went back to bed for like 30 minutes and woke up, and I just figured there was some sort of trolling. I don't even know, man. It's Scotty. Everyone's paying attention to him. I follow all the burners on Twitter. So I'm just like, oh, okay, this is some top tier trolling. Then went to Instagram, started seeing a couple clips there. So like, then I'm like, okay, this is multi-app. I just definitely by far the weirdest memory I've had for the account so far was that. And it was something new every 3 minutes. We were getting a new angle, a new report, new picture. And then we got the image.
Video eventually.
Yeah, we got the video. We got the, I don't know why I'm blanking on the word, the mugshot that was So we ran with it. It was a lot of fun. But yeah, definitely the weirdest moment by far I've had.
Did you memorize his inmate number?
No.
Brent.
I'm not that great.
I woke up to a phone call from Cohen or Brent at like 6:45 in the morning. Like, what is going on here? Why is this guy calling me right now? It's not a call you want to be getting from Cohen or Brent at that hour.
Something's wrong.
Is wrong if he's calling at that hour. I just remember, you know, it's just a crazy morning. Probably, if I had to be honest, one of the craziest mornings in nuclear golf history. The speed at which the updates were coming in, the amount of details that we needed to, you know, get out as well was intense, like very intense. It's just so much happening at all at the same time, and people trying to learn like what the hell is actually going on right now. The wildest part about that whole thing is when he just casually went out and shot like 500 par.
Yeah, it kind of was like the perfect form of what the whole season was culminating, and like it wasn't even all the way through it at that point. But I think that was, I mean, you see that and you're like, all right, this guy's going to go win everything, which he pretty much did. Hasn't been, again, you know, the story thus far this season, but maybe he gets arrested again. Maybe let's get Scotty back.
I was about to say, Joe, he's coming up on a year of keeping his nose clean.
I'm not going to.
No run-ins with the law.
If he manages to just have one run-in each year and then has the streak that he goes on, he can afford every court hearing, precedent, a whole lawyer team. He's fine. So keep your eyes peeled. Sometime this summer, you know, just don't be surprised is all I'm saying.
Somebody looking to make a name for themselves.
Joey, maybe you can orchestrate it.
That's what I'm saying. Like, make a couple calls, you know. Figure out where we're going to be. I don't know. We might have to soon.
Joey, are you good with just subbing in as the fourth here for the rest of the way?
Yeah, once Tim gets in, I mean, I feel bad.
I don't know if Tim – like, Joey. We can't be dealing with the internet like that, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah, Tim, we need to hire Tim, a on-site professional, to just sit next to him and figure out the Wi-Fi. He needs to just hold the router right next to his laptop. And then we should be good. Yeah, I'm ready.
I'm gonna send him some links to some boosters and like I've got Eero at my house. That's pretty good.
Joey, his I have internet. Internet was better at the Airbnb than it is at his house.
Yeah,
which so one? I'm not Airbnb, sure what he's doing.
He's usually at an Airbnb.
The Airbnb Wi-Fi was fantastic. That was the best signal.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was great. Let's
Joey.
Move on.
I have a question though, real quick for you.
Yeah, sure.
Because I know you're a big Tennessee guy.
Oh, God.
Tell me what your thoughts are on the quarterback leaving.
I mean, so I actually was – I'll tell you guys after, but I talked to someone in his camp pretty closely.
Ooh, we got sources. Okay.
Yeah, we got sources.
We got sources. I feel like John right now.
I mean, I think that there's not full sides to the story. It sounds like that, you know, back at the playoffs, he was kind of out of it and – was trying to renegotiate and wiggle his way around. And so now he kind of just woke up one day and decided that he's like, he's worth more and went away. That the sources denied that he ever was shopping Oregon. They denied that. They denied that, you know, that his dad had gone in and made all these demands or anything like that. In fact, his dad was the one that told him otherwise, like sleep on it and go back in. So it's whatever. Best of luck to him. I highly doubt the UCLA path will be as successful as Tennessee's, but now we got Aguilar now, and we're ready to roll. Playoff bound.
Go Vols.
There we go.
Rocky Top, baby.
Yes, sir.
We need to get John singing Rocky Top. That'd be a great clip.
I would pay so much for that.
You guys following NHL right now?
Yes. I am.
I know.
Yeah, at the Stars, that's my Western Conference team. I'm a New York Rangers fan, but they are not in the playoffs this year because they have been cursed by the President's Trophy again. And yeah, it's pretty miserable over here. But there's nothing like an NHL playoffs. You know, it's one of the few sports I can watch from my team's side and still be locked in.
Hutch, do you watch hockey or no?
No, not really, but I do have a question because I have my best friend watches a lot. He's a big Jets fan.
Okay.
Like Winnipeg, not football Jets. Yeah. So I got a question for Mike and John about it because he tells me that their goalie, Hellebuck, is the best goalie in the league, but then when the playoffs start, he turns into the worst goalie of all time.
Yeah, he's been yanked. He's been yanked in two straight games now.
Yeah,
I think he allowed like 9 goals on 47 shots or something along those lines.
That's wild. He said last year he gave up like 26 in 5 games, which was in the playoffs. So,
because
I just John, seems to me like he's not that good, but I don't know anything.
Last year he didn't he win the Vezina.
Did he win the Vezina? He was one of the finalists.
Yeah, I thought he did. I mean, he was probably, I mean, at least statistically, he was the best goalie in hockey last year, I know, and he was up there again this year. I mean, he's, yeah, I mean, it's fairly accurate, Hutch. I mean, for whatever reason, you know, I mean, you get to, you know, April and
May. Yeah,
it's tough. And I mean, I think there's some added pressure being on a Canadian team too, you know, just with, you know, trying to, and I think everyone feels that, you know, John, I'm sure you can probably emphasize that a little bit, you know, how much pressure the Sens are feeling right now. The Leafs, obviously, you know, trying to break their curse. I mean, you know, McDavid got so close last year. I mean, I was rooting really hard for him to get a cup. He needs one for his legacy. So it's real interesting. I mean, there's a bunch of storylines every single year. And the best part about the NHL playoffs is that it's anyone's game. Somebody can get hot and you just never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, John, I heard the Sens were about to mount a nasty 3-1 comeback.
I mean,
don't let the boys get hot.
I'm feeling those vibes. Like,
don't let us win tonight.
If they can win one tomorrow, and then if they bring it back to Ottawa, they'll be down one. I mean, they'll have the crowd on their side back home. I mean, it all depends on tomorrow, right? Like, they're facing elimination, so they need to. It's one game at a time, but they need to win game 5, take that one in Toronto, get it back to Ottawa. If they can get it back and get the crowd in Ottawa is just insane. Like, it's absolute insane. I was at game 3. They didn't win, and they lost in overtime in game 3 right off the faceoff, right at the beginning of the OT, which was brutal loss, but such great hockey game. And game 4 was incredible for the city. Haven't had playoffs here in 7 years. So for there to be a playoff win, fan support is there. People are really into it. So hope for the best for tomorrow night and hope they show up and bring their game. And Toronto has had a tough time when they're facing elimination. They're like 1-12 when they're facing elimination in these series. Not facing elimination. When they're on
the verge, can take somebody out.
Taking someone out. So, but again, like, teams have changed since those times and playing a different opponent, and it's completely different, right? So be interesting to see.
Yeah.
What about Mike pulling out the Red Sox reference there?
Yeah,
don't let us get hot tonight. That happened against you.
Don't. Yeah, I know that was inspired by that post you sent me on Instagram the other day, Hutch.
Big poppy.
Yeah. I'm gonna send some Drew Brees highlights tonight. But yeah, John, I honestly think if the Sens win tomorrow night, the Leafs are in a ton of trouble.
Yeah,
because you get home ice game 6, all the momentum's on, you know, the Sens side, and the Leafs are going to feel all of that pressure, all the noise of, you know, it'd just be the perfect scenario, you know, to go up 3-0 first round and to completely blow it. That'd be the most Leafs thing ever.
Oh yeah, it would
be. Like that. It just feels like it's unfolding in front of us, especially if tomorrow night happens. We'll see. You know, 3-1's obviously not ideal, but you know, if your boys bring it tomorrow night, it'll be very interesting to see what happens whenever the scene shifts back to Ottawa.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, we better shift gears before we lose too many viewers, because I don't know if everybody here is watching hockey. Little bit of talk here about the TGL report from the CAA. I think it was the CAA World Congress, I think it was called, or yeah, CAA Congress, something along those lines. CEO of TGL, Mike McCarley, had some quotes about expansion. He's saying that they're looking to add one more team to the main TGL Golf League in the near future. I'm guessing that it would be for this coming season, I would imagine. Some pretty high bidding going on for that expansion team. You know, a lot of sports team owners were interested in the concept last year. They paid visits to the SoFi Center to kind of see how things were going. They mingled with the other owners. They've learned a lot about, you know, what's involved in this whole ownership. And now they're talking about adding an additional team. So we'll see where it goes with that. Not sure which cities are necessarily under consideration right now. I want to say there was a Dallas ownership group that was interested.
Yes. Yeah, I heard that too, John. Yeah, that I would thoroughly love that.
So I'm not sure which
Joey perked up. He's thinking Scotty.
Scotty would do it in a million years. Scotty and Spieth written all over it.
Yeah. I don't know, though, because, like, Spieth, those guys have a unique opinion about it. I just think that they're, you know, not necessarily the best guys for it all the time, just with their family dynamic and stuff like that. The other complicating factor is just kind of the location of the SoFi Center, traveling back to the middle of the country. You know, when, you know, if tournament's on the West Coast, say a tournament's on the West Coast, they got to go back to the far East Coast and then back, like, back home. Like, getting in between all these locations is difficult. The other interesting thing, actually, is that there's talk of a women's league, like a TGL women's league, not just like an additional team, but Sports Business Journal actually reported on this. I have some quotes. Alexis Ohanian, who is Serena Williams' husband, who is actually one of the owners of LAGC. Well, he is the principal owner of LAGC. He said, I've been bugging these guys about the LPGA deal for a minute. They have been very interested. It's just these things take time and I'm not allowed to make any news. McCarley then confirmed the idea of a women's league was in play. Quote, there's no secret. We're working on that. Alexis has been a great thought leader for us on that. And I think most of our team owners are right behind them in that area too. So it sounds like there's some pretty significant talk about a TGL women's league, in addition to an expansion team on the men's side. Curious to hear what you guys have to say about this, right? Would there be an appetite for this? I mean, ultimately, it all comes down to viewership, right? You know, if there's enough sponsors and there's enough high-profile players that want to be involved, I mean, I think it's possibility for sure. I mean, the concept has been proven on the men's side that it can work. I think there's definitely some changes that need to be made for next season. I would say the first year of TGL was, you know, it started out well, like ratings wise, it started out pretty well. The first few weeks they strategically placed, you know, Tiger, Rory, the first week as an appetizer as well to the Tiger and Rory matches. As things went along, viewership cratered. No surprise. Got later in the season, people kind of lost interest. Some of the guys that were on the teams as well were a bit of a bore. Like, no disrespect to Cameron Young, but not exactly tuning in for him, right? Patrick Cantlay as well. But Sports Business Journal has been reporting on this through Mike McCarley's quotes at the CAA event. What do you guys think about a women's league or TGL?
I'm all about it. Like, it's still in such an infant phase that, like, throw things in, try it. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't stick, then, like, it's not going to hurt the game of golf. I don't think anyone's going to revert away from TGL. Like, people's minds are already made on TGL. I think you can only improve in terms of adding expansion teams, getting better personalities in there that are going to make better clips or just, you know, make the overall game better. But I don't see why it be that damaging to not try it. I mean, you got to definitely tweak the format to make it still hold kind of what TGL started last year. But I mean, again, with it being so young, I don't know why you wouldn't.
It'd be a good thing. I mean, they would have an opportunity to introduce the world to a lot of personalities of these players. We see a lot more of the men. You know, they have better TV deals, better time slots, all that stuff. We see a lot more men than we do the women. women are still great at golf, obviously would wax all of us. So it'd be a good opportunity for them to show off some personalities and maybe actually, and I can't believe that I'm saying these three words because I just loathe them, but it'd be a good opportunity for them to actually grow their game.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I mean, you got a chance to introduce some real personalities to people that otherwise wouldn't know anything about them.
Can Charlie hold smoke inside?
Yes. Are they gonna allow that? Yes. In this version, in my LTGL or TGLL or whatever
LTGL,
whatever we're gonna call it. LTGL. Yes, she. In fact, it's probably required that she smoke inside.
Yeah, you have to have some form of nicotine.
Yeah, you gotta vape or something. She's gotta smoke inside.
Yeah, yeah. Girls' golf is. I feel like it's as popular as ever right now. I mean, you have a lot of big names that intrigue a lot of people. I think Nelly Korda, I enjoy watching her swing a golf club more than any guy, just because her mechanics are so fluid. I mean, she has hardly any flaws in her game. And, you know, these girls have great personalities at the end of the day. And I think that's great for television. And I think it's time that women get their shot on a stage of this nature, you know, like Hutch alluded to. You know, they don't get the favorable time slots. You know, they usually are only on the Golf Channel, you know. So it would be really cool to see, the likes of Korda and Charlie Hole and, you know, big names like that be on the stage that they deserve.
Absolutely. It'll be interesting to see kind of what transpires with TGL. One thing is clear, TGL is going to be back next season. I don't know if we're imminently here with a women's league or anything like that, but they're definitely talking about it. It seems like they're planning for it. I would say we're going to start with the expansion on the men's side and see what other improvements they make next year and go from there. They definitely did pull it off in season one. It could have gone catastrophically bad if they had a ton of technical issues. I mean, let's be honest, the technical stuff wasn't perfect by any means. There was certainly some glitching throughout, but I do think overall, you know, they got through it and it could have been a lot worse than it was. I thought like overall they did okay. That was kind of my takeaway. Fellas, yesterday there was some crazy drama at the Chevron. Area Jutanugan, hopefully I'm pronouncing it
right. Yeah, run that back one more time. Just for fun.
Area Jutanugan.
There we go, baby.
Is that how it is? Jutanugan?
I'm going to call her AJ.
Yeah. She gets to 18 with a one-stroke lead. she's on the 18th hole, and she completely stubs her chip. Ball didn't even advance anywhere. Just, complete flop. And then that gets like she's on the cusp of winning the tournament, basically. And then that sends her into a playoff. All the girls that were one stroke behind go into a playoff with her. So it was a five-way playoff, which is the largest playoff in female women's major championship history. Crazy scenes. And then she lost in the playoff, right? It was
she lost.
Mao Sago jumped 11 spots in the Rolex Women's World Golf rankings to number 13 and 21 spots in the CME Globe ranking. She's number 4 now. She picked up her first major championship yesterday. And just wild scenes with five people in the playoff. Did you guys have a chance to watch any of that?
Yeah, I got to see some of it. I was rooting for Lenny Duncan just because she's an American, obviously. And I thought it was pretty cool. It didn't really get talked about a whole bunch. But Lexi Thompson, she shot 2 under for the tournament, even though she's partially retired. You know, I think if she wanted to, she could still compete out there if she would like.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
It's all about the chip. It's all about the chip.
We're going to try and bring Tim back in here. Apparently his internet is back.
Back like the McRib for a limited time only.
Man. Tim's back. Tim, can you hear us?
Let's go, Tim.
Yeah, I can hear you guys.
Okay. All right.
Well, did you watch the women's golf yesterday? Because, I mean, did you watch?
Watched some of it, but I mean, I saw the final couple holes. I saw the disastrous chip and the bogey that eventually led to a five-way playoff. It's crazy. I can't do names that well, but the girl that hit the second shot for like 12 feet. Yeah. Oh. And three putted in the playoff.
Yeah.
No.
She hit the best shot of all of them and then ended up not making a par and losing to a birdie.
This is crazy. So the winner, Sego, she jumped into the lake, right? As is custom after winning the Chevron. Yeah. She thought she was going to drown. So she said,
"What?
Yeah, I'm not really a good swimmer," Sego said through her translator via Golf Week. "When I went inside, it was deep. And at first, I thought I was going to drown." So that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I know they were complaining a lot on 18 because they put the grandstands up this year. And so you could just fly the green right into the grandstand and it would stop it instead of making it like an impossible chip shot. I know that was one of the big complaints about the tournament this year.
Yeah. Yeah, well, no, that's
a good problem to have. You've got more people interested in coming. Like, that's man, that's a whole different topic. But
one stroke penalty for hitting the grandstand. There you go. good players don't hit it.
You can't miss club by 5 yards. That's wild.
Be better.
Not everybody's got Scotty Scheffler around there.
Yeah, Joey. I know. I'm spoiled.
Hutch, did you watch you said you were watching Liv yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Your boy Joaquin Niemann has just won his fifth tournament on the Liv Golf Circuit.
That's right.
He's actually, yeah. So I saw a crazy statistic. So I guess it's so far this year or so far in all the tournaments that he's played on average on Liv or something. He is currently averaging $2 million in earnings per start on the Live Tour and $10,000 per shot currently.
Yeah. So he's playing all the majors, making all the money, winning all the tournaments. What's not to like?
Very limited very minimal negativity from golf fans overall, just given his kind of place in the game. Yeah. Especially since he's been grinding on the Asian tour to try and qualify for stuff. And anyways, he's broken sort of another barrier in Liv history now. He's become the first Liv golfer to qualify for the US Open through the Liv qualification exemption. Yeah. So the top three players in Liv points list get an automatic spot in the US Open. He's one of those guys.
I thought it was crazy.
Literally
yesterday while I was on, I was thinking, like, because I was obviously tuned in, they had kind of a stacked leaderboard, especially at the start of the day. Okay. We had Bryson, we had John Rahm, we had Cam Smith, and we had Joaquin right up there at the top. Tim can laugh all he wants, but that's way more stacked than what you saw on CBS for the Zurich New Orleans Saints are terrible classic.
Yeah, Hutch, I'm with you.
How do I put up the LeBron gif though? Ooh.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. That's way more stacked than what you're seeing on the other channel.
It doesn't have to be a better overall. It's just like it can be week to week. I'd rather watch that than Carl Phillips and Thorbjornsson choke it on 17 like yesterday. Shout out Sunday Red, Carl Phillips.
Yeah. Hit us up, Sunday Red. Hit me up.
Absolute heartbreak. I agree with you, Hutch. If I see that as a leaderboard, I'm at least gonna watch.
It was just way better. But literally, what I was thinking when Bryson was teeing off, I'm like, this is the biggest golfer in the world, like the most popular golfer in the world, and he's playing on a quote unquote secondary tour. Like, how can it be secondary, especially with that leaderboard? It was so great. And they're giving them pathways into the majors. All the big guys are not missing the majors anyway. Like it's,
you know why
people can hate on it, but it's coming.
Yeah.
You know why it's secondary.
Why is it secondary?
How many guys do you have on Live that are actually worth watching?
Like six.
All of them. All of them.
Not, oh,
maybe God. Seven.
Give not, me a break.
Not all of them. Not all of them.
Okay, but even if seven or eight of them are within the top 10.
You got six guys. You have six guys that get into majors, right?
Pretty you probably much. Got more than that. You probably got a lot more than that with your past exemptions and stuff.
A lot of those guys, though, are, I mean, I guess Bubba Watson did have quite a Masters.
Yeah, and last year Phil did. I mean,
right. Doc Johnson.
You see what I'm saying though? Like it's only been around for like 4 years. Like what are we talking about? We're about to find out, especially if the deal falls through, because there hasn't really been any movement on that. Like if that deal falls through, I guarantee you, especially now that they're starting to give them pathways to get into majors, that the PIF's gonna come up and pony up and take some more of your favorites. And then we'll see who's secondary at that point. I mean, they're already making more money.
Who do you think
making
more
money playing the tournaments, getting in the majors? Like, what else do you want? Now, I will say it's kind of crazy that they have to go from Mexico to Korea and then back to the PGA in 2 weeks.
That sounds terrible.
That sounds like a decision that was made.
But they're all going to get paid well over there.
Yeah, see? So they don't have to cry about anything.
It's interesting. It's interesting for sure. I mean, I do think that like in some of these global markets that Liv is doing good things. You know, in Mexico, for example, you've got young fans there. 50 million
viewers.
I heard supposedly. I've heard, there's 15 billion viewers.
Yeah. No, Mexico for sure. The crowds were electric, and the crowds were electric in Miami and everywhere that they've been this year. The crowds are great. Like like it or not, Mike and Tim, it's a fun environment and atmosphere, and people like to go for whatever reason.
Yeah, I know. I don't disagree with you. It's a great exhibition of golf by some really talented players. You're 1,000% right. I'll never disagree with you on that.
An elite premier. Yeah. Top of the line golfing competition every few weeks.
Also, who doesn't mind? Like, no one bitches when the PGA Tour goes down to Mexico. Like, I don't mind seeing a T-ball go 420. You kidding me? Now, I don't want to see that all the time, but it's pretty cool to see someone just drive a par four twice in a row.
No one's complaining about that.
Oh, they were on the internet. They were on the internet. Yeah,
no. I guess people are quick to forget that. Tiger's shot in Mexico in 2019.
Yeah, same course. So
yeah. No, I agree with that. I just, you know, it just doesn't seem authentic. You know, it's nothing about it seems to be true golf. Like what golf is at its core, Liv is not that. It's like. You know
what golf is now. What golf is now is what Liv is. We're coming out of the 18th century. We're not playing with wooden clubs and persimmon balls anymore. We're playing music. They're doing what we do when we go out and play.
That's not real golf, though.
Who says it's not real golf? It's not real golf till somebody changes it. Yeah, like once the wave starts going that way, that's the way it goes.
No one paid me $3 million for that putt on 18 with the radio blasting.
If you make it, you make $3 million. And if you miss it, you make $1.5 million. You're taking the putt either way, and you don't care what song's on in the background.
When can you start fluffing your lie on Liv?
Is that a Patrick Reed thing?
No, that's just in general. That just seems like something you could do on Liv.
Mike, that's quite a segue there because the discussion post this week is, should we get relief from divots? So, Tim, I want you to go first, if your internet works.
Get him in before we lose him.
Relief from divots. Like, this is, you know, it's always a tough thing if your ball lands in a divot in the middle of the fairway. And then that's the first thing you see. You know it's going to affect your shot, right? Especially if you're an amateur. I mean, from an amateur all the way up to a pro, if your ball lands in that, it's going to affect your shot. Do you think we should be able to take our ball out of that and just play it from a normal lie in the fairway? What do you guys think? Tim, start with you.
Tim ain't moving.
Wow. Wow. Classic.
Right. Hey, I just want to point out that Tim has been in three different rooms in his house while he's on the show. He's been on like five times for a total of 10 minutes in three different rooms.
Hutch, what's your opinion?
So should we be able to? Absolutely. Like 100%. Okay. I think I commented on it and said that, and then some guy came at my throat. He was talking about like, what's too far? How far is too far? You let them start doing that, then they can just take an inch. You can give them an inch and they'll take a mile, and everybody will be lying about their lies and things like that. I'm like, my point back to him was this whole game, you build it on honesty and integrity, right? Mm-hmm. Like you see people disqualify. You saw Ben Crane disqualify himself a week ago, 2 weeks ago. You see people call penalties on themselves all the time. Justin Thomas called one on himself. All the stuff, you see that all the time. How is that where you draw the line of oh, they're going to lie about that, but they're going to be honest about all this other stuff that nobody else saw? Like, what, that just never made any sense to me. It's stupid that you should be punished for hitting it in the middle of the fairway. If you're in a divot in the rough, tough luck, brother. If you're in the middle of the fairway, move it. It's stupid. It's common sense.
Well, he's saying like they'll give you like an inch, like just make a rule and you get a club length in the direct line to the hole or wherever you're trying to go.
Yeah. And you need a club length. Just move it directly outside of it. You don't even need, like, so complicated for no reason.
Yeah. It's not fair to expect a player to control. You can't ever ask anybody to avoid a divot when you're 300 yards away from it. So you're going to penalize someone for hitting a good shot, like you said, in the fairway. And then be like, okay, well, you should hit another good shot, but I don't care how good of a player you are. It's a tainted shot. Tiger Woods now would probably be able to work some magic, but it's the same situation. You're stuck in a sandy divot it's just not ideal. I don't see the argument that people are like dying that it needs to stay. No, they clearly have never been in a divot.
It's the elitists and the purists like Tim and Mike to an extent.
Yeah, so when it comes to, the whole lie situation, would it just be if you're in a divot or just period if you're in the fairway?
Fairway divot.
If you're in the divot, in the fairway.
Just that only?
Yeah. It could be sand-filled. It could be not sand-filled. It could be whatever.
Okay. If you're in a divot, but, for people that are arguing that it should be, period if you're in the fairway, you should get the, fluff your lie, if you will. That seems a bit extreme. But if you're just in a divot, I think that's within reason. And I mean, that's what we all do on the weekend. If you hit a drive right down the middle, you hit a tight draw, 300 yards, whatever it is, and you do your little club twirl, and you're all giddy getting to the fairway, and then you're in a beaver tail right in the middle of the fairway. That sucks. So what do? You move it over to the side a little bit and go on your happy way. I don't see why. That's what people like to see eventually at the end of the day is birdies, and that's going to produce more of those. So I think it makes for better television anyway.
The biggest thing is it's not byproduct of the course. It's byproduct of the players playing the course. So it's not really fair to say that you didn't outwork the course. It's just that there's 50 dudes playing in front of you. So it's not really
it's crap luck.
Yeah.
One of the top comments on our post was, if you hit the ball, this was Wheels 18418. He said, if you hit the ball in the fairway, you deserve a good lie. Not a fan of this, or if the ball rolls into a divot. Wade A. Studley said, it's the literal definition of ground under repair. Makes no sense to me why they make pros hit from divots.
Shout out Wade 18418.
And XL Baller said, you get good breaks and bad breaks. It's part of golf. Get good.
Get good? What does that mean? Get good. He is good. It's in the middle of the fairway.
He said, get good. Right there. I see both sides of it. I mean, it's on one hand, like, golf is about the elements and, the unpredictability, and you never know what can happen. you need to play well to perform well. But at the same time, like if you hit your ball on the divot, you could hit the most perfect drive imaginable and still end up in a divot. Now you're getting penalized for hitting a great shot.
Like the way he says that.
Yeah. Like, I mean, if it's coming down to the last hole on 18 and you're in a divot and you're not able to execute your shot and you lose the tournament, I mean, is that fair?
I don't know. I just don't understand how anybody could argue against it is all I'm saying. Like, is it fair? Absolutely not. It's not fair. Don't tell me anything about good breaks and bad breaks. Are you punished because you're beating everybody and you're playing in the last tee time of the day? Like, what? Yeah. Joey agrees with me because his guy's usually in the last group.
I'm affected.
last thing we've got for you guys tonight is the viral video of the week. This is crazy. One of the craziest videos we've posted. This guy goes over. Well, I'll let you guys have a watch. But this guy goes over to this guy's house to check out a golf cart that he's looking to purchase. The seller warns the guy as he gets into the cart, like, "Be careful, it goes fast." And then I'll let you guys watch the rest.
It's a glove compartment you can put in here. So everything is good to go. No issues at all. Turn it on and it's fast, so be careful when you hit it. You hit the garage. Oh, my God.
The car is still moving.
Come on. I mean, that's my wife's car.
Man. Shit,
man. Man, no.
At the time, you...
Come on. He hit the car.
See, if I'm that guy, you got to sell it. You got to get that lawsuit. You need to, like, be writhing in pain. Call me an ambulance.
Yeah.
It was also
– He tried.
He was going to hit the other wall. Yeah. Like, he was – got an inch of clearance on the other side. I mean, if you're going to sell a golf cart, bring it to the driveway.
Yeah. I agree, Joey. That's a good point. Don't be showing it off. Like, bring it out to the road or something.
Yeah.
That old man was buying that presumably probably for his grandkids or somebody to ride around on. The thing is too much machine for what he needed. The guy, he hit the thing. And I don't know if he just floored it. I don't know how crazy he got about it because you couldn't really see the pedal. But that thing just took off and slammed. He bought a golf cart and a car is what he ended up doing. He went for a golf cart and came out with a car too.
Yeah, that's – I can't. It's – you know, that guy – you know, I say from both sides, you know, like Joey said, you know, you've got to put that thing in the driveway or put it on the street. That way there's no chance of, you know, him doing that. Or what he should have done is gotten in the cart himself and drove it around with him at first and show him like, hey, this is how hard you hit the pedal. This, you know, this has got a lot of, you know, horsepower kind of thing. I mean, and an old man too, like, you know, hopefully he was trying to buy that for his son or grandkids or something like that. Cause that cart probably looks like it goes 40 miles an hour.
Yeah.
No governor.
The thing is souped up. There's no governor. Yeah. Like you always said, no governor. That's wild. Yeah,
that's like, I think Phil Mickelson has a cart that goes like 45 miles an hour or something like that, which is just absurd. The thought of, you know, going nearly highway speed.
I don't know where he got it from. Cause I've bought a couple of golf carts in my lifetime, unfortunately. And I've never had one that would go that fast at all.
Yeah, that was incredible 0-60.
That was took off on it. Like that thing needs seatbelts, bro. That thing needs seatbelts on it.
Especially if you're gonna drive it like that.
Yeah.
We need an update. We need to know if there's a lawsuit involved.
Yeah, I wonder if he bought the cart.
Yeah, I think it's a really old video. I think it's a really old video, to be honest. We can't even find the source or the credit on it. It's been passed around on all these accounts over the years.
Yeah.
It didn't happen yesterday. But man, shitty situation.
I mean, that thing went as fast as like those like Rangers and stuff you see. Like that thing is wild. Why? It's got to be an old golf cart because they don't let them go that fast now.
Yeah, it looks old. It looks older for sure. Well, fellas, it's been an amazing episode. Great to have everyone join us. Thanks so much for tuning in. This has been episode 8 of the Nuclear Golf Podcast. We'll be back next Monday. What do we got this week? Is it the Byron Nelson?
Yep. CJ Cup, yeah. Byron Nelson.
Yeah, CJ Cup, Byron Nelson in Texas. So we'll be back next week to recap that and all the latest golf news. It's been a pretty quiet week in golf overall in terms of news. There hasn't been a ton going on. We're in that hangover from the Masters, I would call it still. But things will ramp up again as we get into the Truist. There's the Creator Classic again happening at the Truist. And then we'll be kind of heading into the PGA just a week after, a week or two after that. So major championship season's back. We've got one major a month, US Open in June, the Open in July, the PGA, right? So like we're back, we're getting into it. The season's kind of picking up, but there's some lulls in between some of the events here. So we'll be back next week. Huge thanks to everyone for joining us tonight, watching along. Huge thanks to you, Joey, for coming on, sharing a little bit about your story. And thanks so much for everything that you do behind the scenes for us. I'm sure you'll be on again.
For sure.
Yeah, Joey, real quick, does your boy do some hometown cooking and take his home tournament?
I hope so, dude. I think that I think this could be the week, get back on track, kind of get set before the summer start, before the majors get really ramped up. So, yeah, he's got a big stretch of golf coming up here. If he doesn't do it here, I think the Memorial might be the next best spot, but we'll do it.
I love it.
All right, fellas. Thanks for joining us, everyone, and we will see you guys next week for episode 9 of the Nuclear Golf Podcast. My name is John, joined by Hutch, Mike, and Joey. Tim was having technical issues tonight.
Tim was here, sort of.
He was with us in spirit. Yeah.
From 3 different rooms in his house.
Yeah. Mr. Worldwide.
Thanks for watching, guys. And we'll see you on the next episode of the Nuclear Golf Podcast. 305.